Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Live from the Guelph Leisure Balloon floating above Woman Wept, it's a wheezing groaning sound, the only podcast about Doctor Who. And this week, we're debating whether to join the Galactic Federation on Peladon, even though Peladon will probably leave in 40 years' time because of a lie written on the side of Agador. Political. So, let's all activate Hepesh mode as the... as the Alpha Centauri Moners take a tour of the castle, joined, as always, by John Pertwee. His hair is white, his eyes are blue, and his jacket is maroon, maroon, maroon.
Hey!
Hey! I'm Tom Neenan, and joining me are two men currently serving 10 years in prison for toppling a statue of Agador. It's Mr. Paul Lynchfield, Mr. John Rain!
Hey! We're back, baby!
We're back!
And it feels good.
It feels so good. I've missed you guys.
Oh, I missed you too.
It's been... We have a secret WhatsApp where we sort of, you know... I'm so sorry. I'm glimpsed behind the curtain. And I've noticed we've sort of... Yeah, there's been a lot of itching to get back and chat about Doctor Who on there. So it's really nice to be back.
Mm. We've all been writing our own photo album books and sharing them. Yep.
Exactly.
Although I got it wrong. Mine is a book of Danny's. I must have misread it.
And I got mine wrong as well. Mine is a book of sarnies. It's just pictures of sandwiches. It's very strange. Tom's, however, is fowl.
It's chickens. Hey! Having a great time. So let's kick things off, shall we? We're doing The Curse of Peladon. But Paul, what else was on TV on this day of days?
Well, I shall tell you, Tom. Mm-hmm. The Curse of Peladon splatted onto our screens on Saturday, the 29th of January, 1972.
Whoa.
Oh. At a beautiful, respectable time of 10 to 6. That's
a very perfect
Doctor Who time, isn't it?
Mm. Yes.
Now, obviously, if you're watching the Beeb on that day, you had nothing until midday. and then you were hit by the double-deckers.
Here come the double-deckers.
Here come the double-deckers. Mm. The blurb says, a show about a gang of children who hatch up plans in a disused bus.
Jesus. Quite threatening.
It does sound very threatening, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you were grandstanding away from 12:45 right up until 5 p.m. And then it was the news, and then it was immediately Doctor Who, Curse of Peladon.
Great.
And there is a blurb. It's the shortest blurb in the world, and it is thus. The Doctor takes Joe to a planet.
Wow.
That's your lot.
It's very scaled back.
You might as well just say, the Doctor's in this. I mean, it's just, okay, fair enough.
That was the pitch document they put in.
Yeah. Guys, I got a great story. the Doctor's in this. Yeah, let's greenlight that one. Well, and they pretty much did greenlight Curse of Peladon, which I'm sure we'll discuss.
Yeah, get onto that.
It's the only colour palette in the entire fucking thing, but there you go. 7 p.m. was Dixon of Dot Green.
Fun.
And it says this, a vindictive woman puts Harry behind bars.
Oh, no.
Vindictive woman. Then at 7:45, there was a film called The Manhunter, starring Roy... Now, I don't know how to pronounce this, because it's... It's T-H-I-N-N-E-S. So is it Thinnes?
Thinnes,
Thinnes. Roy Thinnes, you know? Fine actor Roy Thinnes.
Thinnes.
And Sandra D.
Oh,
there you
look
go.
At me, I'm Sandra D. That's
exciting.
That's
the one. Mm. And the film blurb is this. Big game hunter David Farrow is in Louisiana hunting game. His quarry, man. Oh, he's going to hunt a man, shoot him, stuff him, put him on his wall.
The most dangerous game of all, Paul.
Man, indeed. Mankind, man cruel. Anyway, then there was a load about guff, and then at 11 p.m. was Braden's week.
Oh,
And it just says this, which is bizarre. It just says Braden of the week, Braden. Nonsense, Ronald Fletcher. Song of the week, Jake Thackeray. Children of the week, Harold Williamson.
Oh,
so
sure.
is he all the children of the week?
Presumably he has to pick the Braden of the week, and it's always him.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Stop picking on me. And then at 11:35 was The Night the Bridge Caught Fire. Which also sounds like a folk song.
Yeah.
In May 1970, five loutish youths set fire to the Stevenson Tubular Bridge. Vincent Kane finds out how.
Wow. Is that where the phrase comes from?
What phrase?
Burning your bridges.
Oh, well, from 1970?
Yeah, probably not.
sorry to pick a hole there.
Yeah.
In your TED talk, Tom.
Yeah. I'm cancelling it now.
So early on. Boo.
All right, I've got a plan B. Where do all the socks go?
Yeah.
I reckon there's an island somewhere on planet Earth where all the washed-up socks go, but there you go.
Yes.
BBC Two was a wonderful day of viewing. It started at 9:35 with Open University. No course listings, I'm afraid. Very annoying. Oh. And then it immediately closed down again at 1 p.m. And then it opened again at 7:10 with Westminster. And it just says, Peter Hardiman Scott reviews the political sea.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hello.
Yeah. Mm. And then at 8:30 p.m. was Chronicle. Frontline archaeology action with Magnus Magnusson.
I'm sorry, you have to remove the word action from the
frontline archaeology action.
Oh, doesn't get more exciting than that,
doesn't it? Just and then at 9:20, Germinal Part 5. Now I think we've discussed Germinal before in one of our other ones, in one of our other episodes. And this is Part 5, Trapped. It says, the strike is almost over, and some of the miners consider the idea of resuming some work.
Well, chance be a fine thing.
Yeah, well, they just consider it, though.
Yeah.
And then at 10 p.m, Ways of Seeing with John Berger, which is something that I've discussed with John on another podcast, which is
Book
of cod philosophy stroke art appreciation,
yes.
Which was very de rigueur when I was at drama school. There you go. And at 11 p.m. was a film, film night, and it says Sheridan Morley will interview Twiggy. He will.
Whether she likes it or not.
Yeah. And this is the best thing ever. At 11:30 p.m. it's Rolf McTell in concert, right?
Oh,
and the duration of the program, 20 minutes.
It's just Streets of London.
Yeah, it's four Streets of London six times, and then he goes off.
20 minutes.
Good God.
And that was your viewing on BBC One and BBC Two.
Very nice. What a fun evening. More fun, given that, we're going to dive into Peladon. I'm going to ask, had either of you seen The Curse of Peladon before this?
Yes.
You had?
Definitely.
I had not, no.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you lucky man.
Yeah.
Get to experience it fresh, because here we are. We start in media res, in the throne room of Peladon. It's a disappointing throne room early on, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one chair.
It's a minimalist IKEA.
I mean, his mates really can't even sit down.
It's why they're all so angry.
Yeah, they've got bad backs.
Yeah. Hepesh has got really tired legs, so that's why he's
so
furious.
Come in, do take a stand.
You have to use Hepesh's full name, by the way.
Oh, which is?
His surname is To Be Square.
And then of course there's Torbis, whose surname is or not Torbis, so it's all talking
about. What goes on the Torbis stays on the Torbis. That's what they say on Peladon.
Well, it doesn't stay on Torbus very long, does it? Because Torbus is dispatched very quickly.
He is, after waffling on. I can't even remember what he says.
He's Mr. Science, isn't he? Mm. He's Mr. like, there is no Agador. Mm. And he thinks
push
that...
pineapple, shake a tree.
We are running down that pun hill. We're full pelt today, boys.
You're off to a flyer.
It's basically two bickering brothers, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, you said that. No, I didn't. Well, you said that. Well, you started it. Mm.
And in the middle, you've got David Troughton saying, please, everyone, please.
Yes.
Do you think people at the time were like, oh my God, it's the second Doctor's son in this?
I hope so, because like his casting seems to have a weight to it, doesn't it? Like, it's the fact that Joe finds him quite a catch.
I was going to say, he's a shagger, so it's typecasting.
Because previously, obviously, David Troughton appeared in Doctor Who before in The War Games and in Patrick Troughton's Balls. So we've got this.
I wonder if that's on his CV. Yeah.
It's his most famous role.
Patrick Troughton's Balls.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, because David Troughton goes on to be in probably my favourite New Who story in Midnight as well. He's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
I love David Troughton. I also saw him as Hook at the National Theatre, and obviously Mr. Darling as well, as is traditional.
It's confusing to keep up with the Troughtons, though, isn't it? They're like such a dynasty, what with their dad basically being a fire hydrant of sperm. I mean, they're everywhere. There was one in The New Statesman, there's this one.
Yes.
Have you not seen Keeping Up with the Troughtons on ITV?
That can do that, because you've got Dudley Dursley as well now. Who's
yes, Dudley Dursley's
good
grandson.
Doing well for himself, so...
I thought I knew all the Troughtons. And then in a Doctor Who story, oh dear, we're going to get letters. Mm. The one with Nick Frost as Father Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
With that one. There's another Troughton in that as well. Mm. And I was like, it's a bit like McGanns. There's a lot of McGanns.
But there are less McGanns than Troughtons, I'd say. I think there's about 15 McGanns, but there's about 48,000 Troughtons currently working. Some of whom don't know they're a Troughton.
Yeah. And they're all doing well, right? Because there's the Troughton who's in the Fast Show, who sort of does the sort of supporting parts in the Fast Show as well. He might be the one for The New Statesman, I'm not sure. But yeah, they're everywhere.
Mm. Wow.
So then we cut to the TARDIS, and Joe Grant is all dolled up for a date with Mike Yates.
Yeah, they're going to the cinema, aren't they?
They are.
Yes.
I think that date will end in a handshake.
I was just going to say something else then.
It's such a shame that they've cut the scene before with Yates cutting a hole in the popcorn box.
See, I was under the impression that Joe might be barking up the wrong tree with Mike Yates. I didn't know whether that...
Okay. All right.
Well, I would say barking up the wrong Forest of Dean.
Well, I read something interesting about Katie Manning, which I had to tell you both in our secret WhatsApp group, is that...
Yes, indeed.
She briefly dated Jimi Hendrix.
Mm. That's amazing.
How's about
Absolutely
that then?
Amazing.
I mean, at this point, he's been dead for 2 years, so it's irrelevant. But I just thought I'd bring it up.
I'd imagine at one point he probably picked her up and played guitar with her.
Yeah, she's so small.
He set fire to her. It was awful.
There's that weird thing about Jimmy.
I bet he played her with his teeth, eh?
Smashed an amp with her.
Yeah. It hurts we didn't get there first.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
He put her out.
Because obviously there's that rumour that Hendrix also did played guitar on the Likely Lads theme tune, which I think is now being disproved, right?
Mm, yeah.
Yes, I think that might be officially bullshit.
Yeah. But I like the fact that Hendrix sort of circles this weird bit of like 70s telly, that he's constantly involved in it.
Well, it's possible because the Likely... Oh, no, I'm thinking of the Liverbirds. Carry on.
Oh, yeah.
it's a bit like when someone says to you, did you know that the Mamas and the Papas wrote John Craven's Newsround theme? They didn't.
It was Bob Holmes. They did.
Yes.
It was Bob Holmes, as we all know.
Yeah.
Did it on a mandolin. It was amazing.
Yeah. Now, I would say I love this era and I love this TARDIS, but the old blown up blister pack wall of the TARDIS is looking a bit shoddy in this thing. It's not looking its best, but nevertheless, it's quite exciting. And they get out of the TARDIS, and it only goes and falls down a bloody cliff.
Yeah.
No, it's the first test flight, apparently, according to the Doctor.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a test flight, and he's already parked it on a ledge.
Yeah.
And it looks like when he's been trying to fix it, he's been keeping it outdoors in the rain, because it looks fucked.
It really
well,
does,
he does say
paint's that peeling off and everything.
I know. He does say there's a tiny fault in the interstitial beam synthesizer.
I don't know what that means, but he's got a little thing in his pocket, hasn't he? He takes that.
He also says that it's indestructible, so it's fine.
That's fine.
they had to write that in, because when it falls down the cliff, it looks like it went into about 3,000 pieces. Don't really do. The TARDIS is indestructible.
Yes, that's just a model that's it's very good. There's some model maker just panicking as that thing sort of bounces down the hill. Yeah, I mean, it looks great. I love it.
It looks brilliant.
You're convinced that we're on this alien world, and I think, and they look in proper danger and stuff. I think
if you haven't
brilliant.
Seen it, it looks like the opening credits to the TV series Nightmare.
Yes.
And there's a lovely sort of 2-3 minute section of the Doctor and Joe climbing up the sheer side of a mountain.
With a hairdryer on their face.
Yeah. I think it looked really... It's quite
amazing.
Convincing.
Yeah.
I think it looks great. And also, I would say, I really like, for the most part in this, I think Pertwee and Joe... Why am I using the Doctor and Joe? Sorry, they. I like their relationship in this one.
It's
there's not a lot of
fantastic,
isn't it? Mm. They're getting on, and they seem to really like each other. And I don't know. I find this one. I wish they'd sort of gone with this more rather than the kind of slightly more bossy version of that Pertwee gave him.
He says something to her at the end, which we'll get to later. But he said when he says it to her, I was like, oh,
yeah. Lovely. But yeah, there's some really nice moments in this. And so they're climbing the hill. Meanwhile, we meet one of Doctor Who's sort of most, I guess, infamous. I love this character. I think this is a really fun and interesting...
go on.
No, it's
Alpha
brilliant.
Centauri.
No, it's brilliant. Yes,
you mean
Alpha Centauri.
A.K.A. the Mekon's cock.
I think you mean an acorn's erection.
Yeah.
A shifty coppice.
Yeah.
The thing's microphone.
Yeah.
A gnome's tennis ball.
Yeah.
An egg on a fun run. A big green willy.
Yeah. Someone has been feeding a monoid, and it is kind of looking like this. I really like Alpha Centauri.
The voice, though, is that, it's an interesting choice. I'll say that.
I think it's a brilliant choice because they could have so easily gone down there, that sort of, and said they just thought, let's give it to John Inman and give him some helium.
Yeah.
It's like a librarian in a tumble dryer.
Oh, no. Basically, it's basically the alien equivalent of Michelle Dotrice in Some Mothers Do Have This.
Yes. Oh, Frank! Oh.
When he hulks out.
Yeah.
Well,
I've gone and killed Arcturus.
Oh, no. God, and a whoopsie in the control room. If the TARDIS was falling down, he'd be in it, wouldn't he?
Yeah. On the roller skates.
Yeah.
Oh dear! I really like the delegate of Alpha Centauri.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I do. It's just the voice took me a few minutes to get used to.
Yeah,
it's a lot, isn't it? And of course, still going strong. The name of the voice of Alpha Centauri, I cannot for the life of me remember. Isan Churchman,
yeah.
Who reprised the role quite recently Empress of Mars.
She's 95 years young.
Whoa! Yeah.
And unfortunately, she reprised the role in EastEnders. And it really sticks out.
Ooh, come out of my pub!
Merry Christmas, Ange!
Oh. I was going to be a total slag.
A bogey in a fishbowl.
Well, if we're talking about bogeys in fishbowls, we meet the other. So,
I mean, what the fuck is this? It looks like Ken Dodd.
Really...
has been grasped by voodoo natives. Head shrunk and put in a fishbowl.
I think it's a really brave, mad choice for an alien.
Yeah. Yes. Because it's also, Alter is so unlikable.
It's green, and then Alpha Centauri is green, and then we meet the Ice Warriors who are green. Just, sometimes they just mesh into one omni-green thing. Just make one blue or silver or something. Just give them a little bit of a dip. But anyway, that's my only quibble. I like the fact that he sort of spumes out sort of like that sort of horrible fairy liquid inside his dome.
Yeah. And he is like, the character's horrible, right? Because the first thing, like, he turns up and everyone says, welcome, Doctor, and everything. And then he's like, a light. And he's just sort of so curt and horrible, which I quite enjoyed.
And he blows up something.
He does. Yeah. To prove that he's, you know, he can handle himself.
He's armed and dangerous, yeah.
I'm handy. Yeah. Don't let the fact that I can barely move for you.
Don't get upset the fact that it's basically a chemical toilet with a colander over it.
Imagine queuing for a pint and he's behind you. There. You go first. You go first.
Haven't got any spare change. Oh, God, this is going to take forever.
Can you mash up those pork scratchings?
Just pour it down the chute. Anyone fancy a game of pool? I don't know how you're going to do this. I might stick around for this.
Could you put the 50p down for me? And hold the queue.
Wrong slot. Oh. Anyway.
And then, the Fonz walks in and gives him a whack. And then
and he turns good.
Yeah. And then, of course, to complete the triumvirate of annoying sounding aliens, you've got the Ice Warrior, the leader of the Ice Warriors, who every time he's walking, he's like.
Has anyone seen a documentary on Netflix called Murder Among the Mormons?
No.
Not yet.
Ah, well, there's a guy in it who sounds like an Ice Warrior. That's all I could think of when I was watching this.
If I was going to watch that, then I immediately go, he did it. He did it. Yeah, he did it. The guy who sounds like a fucking Ice Warrior.
Yeah, and so does the Doctor, but we'll get to that. Yeah,
yes, indeed. Because they find a secret tunnel that leads them up to the surface, a secret door, and that's very fun. So they arrive at this very heated.
Because they're waiting for the Earth delegate to arrive.
Yes, that's right. Exactly.
They must have come by British Rail. We'll get to you later.
And they think on their feet and they pretend to be the Earth delegates.
Oh God, I love this.
It's amazing.
So
the Doctor
good,
introduces
isn't it?
Her as the Princess Josephine of TARDIS.
That's right.
That's so funny.
Oh,
that's brilliant.
And I love Pertwee's. It's beautiful acting. Pertwee's face all the way through this when he's like, "Oh, I'm going to have to think on my feet," and then they're like, "Oh, so you must be from the Earth." Delegation, and he's like, yes.
And there's a lovely bit where he suddenly realizes that he has to be subservient to Joe. He's like, oh God, I'm shot myself in the foot here.
And Joe loves it.
Joe
She's
loves
so
it.
So good.
Yeah.
And Katie Manning
jump off
gets
a cliff,
to really,
you prick.
Katie Manning gets to really like flex, doesn't she, and like do some acting, and it's really good. So she becomes the princess, and so a lot of arguing continues in the throne room before they decide they're going to leave the throne room for some reason. And in doing so, we get our first cliffhanger, which is when the statue of Agador plummets towards them.
Yes, terrifying. Or the statue of Ulf, alien life form. Yes. It's one or the other.
He saw a cat.
Yeah.
And the guy who plays the King of Peladon, that's Piers, isn't it, from Alan Bastard?
No, it's his brother.
Oh, it's his brother. Yeah. Okay. I genuinely thought it was him.
No.
He's got a fancy get-up, isn't he? He's got thigh-high boots.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and very short shorts.
Showing a bit of thighs.
Yeah.
He's lovely, isn't he? Yeah.
It's
King
very
Bros.
Fashionable.
And he immediately fancies Joe as well, doesn't he?
Of course he does.
He's having a bit of that.
I mean, if you think about it, on Peladon, he's had Hepesh and Torbis, and no one else really.
No.
So, I mean, Joe Hepesh. Could look. I think he was cracking onto Alpha Centauri before Joe arrived. It was that desperate a time.
Oh my God, yeah, it must be like being in prison when he sees a woman. He's just like, oh.
Well, he was eyeing up the delegate from Octurus for a bit, thinking, yeah.
I mean, the bowl is curvy. It'll work. We can make it work.
Hi there. I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries, and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. and we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, yeah, luckily no one is killed in the plummeting Agador statue.
No.
So they all go back into the throne room where Hepesh... where am I going here? Yes, and so we sort of get the first bit of, you know, there's some seedy stuff going on. People aren't to be trusted. Yeah.
And we get the usual ever since you turned up.
Yes.
Yeah, and you're like, well, hang on, there's three other fucking delegates here.
Right? They haven't been here long, so...
Can I just say something really quickly, just because I doubted myself on the Troughton fact?
Mm.
You know, you said this Troughton from this was in the Doctor Who episode with Father Christmas.
Hang on. There is a Troughton, but I don't know which Troughton.
That's the new statesman, Piers.
There we go.
Interesting. Okay, right. We're squaring the circle with all the Troughtons.
Yes, sorry. That's a very confusing thing to get into.
No, but it's good. There'll be people listening to this who'll be... There'll be Troughton... Troughton kind of historians who'll be furious.
Well, exactly. That's why I thought I'd double check.
Yeah. There'll be people saying, the Box of Delights! And we'll get in a lot of trouble.
Oh, yeah. The secret journey of the Doctor.
Yes. I'm convinced it's canon.
Do not want to upset the Delight crowd.
Yeah. No. The wolves are running, guys. Then we get kind of, there's a bit of a, they all sort of split off into their separate rooms and things, and they have a
chat.
They
all do some snooping.
Mm. They do some lovely snooping.
And it's Joe finds a flibbertigibbet.
Well, isn't there this weird bit where the Doctor's talking to the Troughton King?
Yeah.
and gives Joe an eye signal, and she sneaks back through the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And then finds where the statue was, and finds like a little bit of electric circuitry on the floor.
A flibbertigibbet. Which turns out to be an electronic key.
And what I like is they're sort of discussing it amongst themselves. They're like, who could have done this? And John Pertwee basically says, it's not Arcturus, because he's fucked. It's not... That guy is not doing anything.
No. Apart from a spin cycle.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where we find out also that Alpha Centauri is a hermaphrodite hexapod.
Hexapod.
Yeah.
Hexapod, yes. And then suddenly he has his life support cube stolen.
That's to be fair, that's the Doctor's very nice way of saying he can go fuck himself.
I reckon the detergent got mixed in with
I really want that scene to play out, that they find out that he's, you know, broken when the Doctor's standing there with no kex on and his trousers. He's feeding his trousers into it. Oh, I'm so sorry, dear chap. I thought you were a washing machine.
There's an amazing scene which they cut where they go, Delegate Arcturus runs bare to with Calgon. There's an alien called Calgon in it.
John Pertwee's trying to put a 50p in him to get a Twix out.
If you press B3 on Arcturus, let me cup of tea.
Well, I tried to fix him, Joe, by putting the circuits together. All I got was a cup of hot Bovril.
All I got was a Twix, one finger.
Yeah.
And it was a middle one as well. I don't know how that works.
How do they do that?
He's made
Twix's middle finger.
give hunger the middle finger. So he's been sabotaged.
He's been sabotaged. I mean, it's and very easy to sabotage him. Yes, thank goodness.
Yeah. And he sends Joe to check, because he basically says at this point, look, those Ice Warriors are cunts. I don't trust them. Go and search their room.
Mm. Yes, that's right.
So she does. She goes snooping. She hides behind some lovely tapestries. But the tapestries.
I am Mickey Mouse.
And she gets caught. She gets caught by the Ice Warrior.
Because her feet are sticking out the bottom. She's got pink shoes on.
Yeah.
And she's playing a guitar.
Yeah.
One man band. She's got a full one man band on. Side note, Katie Manning's costume in this and her old sort of the makeup and everything else in her hair, I just think she looks absolutely stunning.
Yes.
She looks like a princess, Tom.
She does. Mm. Thank goodness. Thank goodness she looks like a princess in this one.
Yeah. It's
when she has to play a princess. Unawares.
What's really weird about this scene is she gets sort of like, what are you doing in our room? Sort of thing. They have a bit of a sort of conflab, and then they leave, and she just, go out the window then.
Yeah. And does good acting, because she has to get onto quite a high table in a very wafty dress. She manages to just Tomb Raider her way out of that room.
Which is really fun. I think the Ice Warriors like locked her in or something, because then they're like, I think this Earth Princess is up to something. But she's crept out. She's trying to escape. Meanwhile, the Doctor stumbles across the Tomb of Agador.
Which is literally just two doors down.
It really is.
And another elf statue.
Yeah. There's a strong Dragonfire vibe in this, which is like,
there is.
You're meant to believe that you've gone so far deep under the city, but it's all about 2 minutes away.
Geography makes no sense. But
Sometimes, if you're sat in the throne room, you can sometimes see the ears of Agadon just poking up from the floor.
I love the fact that David Troughton's never explored beyond one corridor.
Yeah. He literally goes from the throne room to another room. But we're meant to believe it's this vast labyrinthian castle, but he doesn't know anything about it.
No, and it's so easy to get into the sort of the catacombs, isn't it? But he's never really had an explore.
Joe and the Doctor have been there 5 minutes and they've gone.
It's a huge neon sign with an arrow going catacombs this way.
I'm guessing he's just not a curious man.
No, he likes his throne room. He doesn't want to move from there.
No, he has got the only chair, so you would stay there.
Yeah.
He's like a German tourist on holiday. I'm Bagsy in that.
Yeah.
I'd say the musical chair games in that castle. Yeah.
Going to be easier now that Torbis is dead. But
exactly.
Still,
You've now got a 50% chance. But.
Yeah.
But I'm not leaving the chair. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you're still
fine. So let's play. No. It's a rubbish game.
Can we not get a stereo instead of that? Just sing that song.
Oh, wow.
We're so close to it as well. I'm excited about that bit. So, yes, the Doctor stumbles across the inner sanctum, the Tomb of Agador, and touches a statue. And for Hepesh, that's enough. He's furious.
How
dare you be here? So in a thing which I think is not a great move for like a diplomatic mission, Hepesh is like, oh, we're going to kill you.
Which is immediate recourse.
Shouldn't the Doctor say diplomatic immunity?
Yes, like in Lethal Weapon 2. But no, he doesn't stumble that at all. Instead, obviously, you got old King Peladon, who's been a bit wet at this point and doesn't want, you know, he says, sorry, whatever Hepesh says goes. So yeah, he's going to have to die. But then they reach a compromise, which is not a great compromise, which is it will be trial by combat.
With the king's champion called Grun.
Grun.
Who, by the way, we did see earlier. We didn't mention it. We did see it was him who pushed the statue over.
It was.
Yeah. Yes. By orders of someone.
So we know he's in on it somehow, but we later find out he's an idiot.
Exactly. And you, at that point, when they say trial by combat, you can see Pertwee, like, he's so happy, isn't he?
Oh, he's thinking, can I run him over with a motorbike?
Hovercraft.
Is that in the budget? Yeah, can we get a hovercraft in it? I think I should chop his head off with a helicopter. John, there are no helicopters on Peladon.
I believe there should be a Brompton in this scene. No, we're not doing it. I'm so sorry, Mr.
A JCB.
Yeah. Joe, meanwhile, is begging Peladon. And then he talks about an interplanetary alliance. And I thought, I've never heard it called that before.
He wants to marry her immediately.
He does. He's going to kill the person who's sort of there as her
ward.
Aide. Her ward, thank you. Mm. And he wants to marry her, which is, yeah, that's... Maybe he's learned, like, from the game or something how to pick up women, and that's, like, negging or something. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, no. But to be fair, he doesn't gaslight her or anything. He's just wet, as you say.
Yeah,
He's not malicious.
Mm-hmm. Well, the gaslights, they scare off Agador, don't they?
Oh, hey! Also, they lead to the secret passages. So.
Exactly.
And I love the fact that Joe and the king are sort of having this sort of little contretemps, this sort of to and fro, please help me, Lala, and I love you. And then, meanwhile, the doctor is having a chat with Hepesh, laying resplendent on a fur rug like he's about to do a Playboy shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, because Hepesh is going to let him free, right? He's got like a plan to sort of free him.
Yes.
And there's this chat where Hepesh says of joining the Interplanetary Alliance, we would rather be cave dwellers and free. And I thought, that's the kind of thing that someone says to O'Brien, isn't it? To James O'Brien. When he's like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's there on the LBC being like, okay, so you're telling me that you'd rather be a cave dweller than free?
Oh, okay, mate, okay. 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 That sounds like solid logic there.
Yeah.
Let me tell you for about 20 minutes why you're wrong. Can I get a word in edgeways? No, afraid not, mate.
No.
I just don't understand it. Okay, that's his decision.
Okay, okay. Buy my new book. It's called Why I'm More Clever Than Everybody Else. Available from Very Clever Publishers.
Open brackets, okay, close brackets.
Okay, next caller. Okay. Please be a racist.
I want to go viral.
That's James O'Brien sorted. Tick.
Done. You see, the left can laugh at themselves.
Put in his place there.
Yeah. And so Hepesh lets the doctor escape. Meanwhile, Joe and Islia are having a chat.
Islia
St.
Claria.
they're chatting and they're trying to. So she's sort of doing the diplomatic stuff. It's quite a good scene.
Yeah.
There's some really fun. There's a bit of some proper satire going on here, which is quite fun.
Mm.
But then I think the thing that everyone remembers from this story happens, which is the Doctor having escaped, disappears into the catacombs, comes across a quite well-realised Agador. It's lit in the dark, and I think, actually, that costume and that rendering of the monster is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just needed a bit more size and bulk to it.
It
also,
did, yes.
Another sound effect.
Yeah.
Even when it's doing nothing, it's going... you'd like a small growl or a little snuffle here or there, but
yes, no, it's just got
just
one mode,
one record.
And then John Pertwee does. I mean, this is why you get John Pertwee to be your hero, right? Because
this is pure class.
Mm. Yeah. Can I get you to give us a little blast of the Venusian lullaby?
It's something along the lines of Mac Trac La Tran de Gechnamana Run Run Run. It's a thing of absolute beauty.
It is.
And at number one this week on Song of the Past, Naroon, Naroon, Naroon. With his Pan's people. Oh, God, Jay would have done it, yeah. With Pan's people all dressed as Agador behind him.
Yeah, all going
to
sleep.
Oh, my God, that would have been amazing.
Naroon, Naroon, Naroon.
The stage could have been a giant replica of the thing he's hypnotising it with.
Oh, that
the spinning pendant.
Oh, Alpha Centauri could have had in the middle eight, had like a rap breakdown.
With a sideways baseball cap on.
Yeah. My name's Alpha Centauri and I'm here to say.
The delicate conference is not going my way. It's a really painful, awful.
The little washing machine bloke struggles out and he goes, break it down.
He's got a record inside his dome.
They're spinning on top of it.
With his tongue.
Yeah.
Spitting it with his own tongue. I mean, it's all there. It's all there.
What a
Ice Warriors come out and break dance. Helmets go flying off.
It's a brand new number one this week for John Pertwee and the Naroon Naroon Naroons.
No, I'm sad that never happened. Given this, yeah, like you say, the stuff that John Pertwee did release, that is a shame. Yeah. That never went anywhere.
Ice Warriors moonwalking at the back. Yeah. It's all there. Body popping.
Doing the robot.
Yeah.
Or getting the robot from the later Tom Baker episode they haven't made yet to come out and do the robot.
To do the and giant robot.
It'd be a great thing. And then Pertwee, right towards the end, he opens up Arcturus like a tumble dryer and puts on a cape. Nice and dry. That's how he finishes it.
Nice. I'm quite fly.
Here's mud in your eye. Oh! Anyway.
What a shame that never came to pass.
No.
But instead...
Pushed to Be Square did go to number one. Yes. So recently. Yeah. And Agador.
Ah, good.
Oh, door. Scare people in the tunnels.
Push the TARDIS off the cliff. Dear me.
But then we get a moment which is back to old Joe and the Doctor, where Joe turns up and in all good intentions, frightens off Agador. Mm. At which point the Doctor's like, "Oh, Joe! Oh, you prick!"
Yeah, he does resort to type very briefly, doesn't he?
He does. Which is a shame, because in this one he's actually, he's been quite, you know, they've got a really nice dynamic.
In his defence, though, it's fairly justified, considering he's just calmed the monster that's murdering and scaring everybody in the entire castle.
Yeah.
So he was getting somewhere, Joe.
Oh, God damn it, Joe.
And what is great about Joe's journey in this is because the Doctor's already told her, these are Ice Warriors, some of the most dangerous, warriors in existence. She's like, right. And then she spends most of the episode sort of interacting with them and then sort of ends up becoming friends and like a confidant to them. They do this lovely switcheroo from going like from warlike people to actually people who want genuinely get peace sorted and want to do it fairly, and it's a nice twist.
It's sort of, you know, the sort of thing Star Trek VI explored with the greatest warriors now becoming diplomats and wanting peace with the rest of the Federation and all that kind of stuff.
It's a bit of a nuanced story, isn't it? It's quite nice in that way, yeah.
It's the sort of thing Doctor Who's good at, Tom.
It is. This is why we watch it. This is why we're fans. Mm. For anyone asking after the last three that we did, why are you fans? We were asking the same thing.
Yeah.
But then there's the battle. Then there's the trial by combat. And barring some obvious stunt double work, this is on film.
It's amazing.
It's so good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It gets a little bit Women in Love.
Yeah.
Slow motion, sort of two men just sweating and grunting into each other.
It's not as bad as the two Doctors one.
The Three Doctors, when he's battling Omega's brain and it's a weird goblin thing.
It's all slow motion weird.
Oh, yeah. But Gladiators ready! Doctor ready!
No. This is at least serving a purpose in terms of the story. But it shows that the Doctor is a hard... double hard bastard.
And
can beat the King's Champion. But also has, he says, "I won't kill you, Grum."
Yes, yeah. Mm. Which is, I mean, imagine
I'll
if that...
I'll kiss you instead.
If it had gone the other way, though, can you imagine just like an episode of Doctor Who where he has Grum there and he's like defeated him and he just like stabs him in the neck. It's like, Grum, I beat him.
Well, I thought that's where it was going for a minute.
Oh, really?
Because he puts his neck through the... puts his head through the rope ring and it looks like it's going to stamp on his back and break his neck.
Oh, God! So dark!
Slit his throat and piss on him. Yeah. I will not entertain!
Shit down his throat.
Yeah. They're all like looking down on him going, "Okay, Doctor, stop now."
Okay, yes, you won.
Yeah.
Why are you running around with his severed leg between your legs, showing at the size of my cock?
Luckily, he spares Grun, lovely Grun.
Yeah. But then we get our next cliffhanger.
Yes, I'm not quite sure what... Like, the cliffhanger itself is quite confusing as to what we're meant to think is happening and what the motivations are.
Yeah.
But the upshot of it is that the Arcturus is, I mean, just sort of splattered, more so than usual.
Mm.
And because the Ice Warriors have shot him.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very, and so yeah,
which,
he
again,
explodes.
As you say, is quite confusingly done.
Yes.
It's because they're all green to... and it's really badly lit, so you can't see what's happening.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I think it yeah. is, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. you're not quite saying, okay, that's, yeah, they've got the gun, and then obviously, I mean, Osiris looks like that anyway. When Osiris is like, he's dead, you're like, that's kind of what he looked like to begin with. Like, he was never the best looking alien.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So this obviously then, all the diplomacy and everything, it's a tinderbox. It's a political tinderbox. And there is. And Hepesh at this point, he's sort of leading an uprising, much like... another political thing that happened recently. He's going to, like, he's raising an army to storm the capital, basically, isn't he?
Yeah.
And they sort of work out that what Hepesh has done is he's... Are there lots of Agadors? The implication is he sort of went to a forest where there's loads of Agadors.
Yeah.
And he got an Agador and then put it in the catacombs.
Mm. That is sure. what they say.
Yeah.
But we know that Hepesh wants to create a federation conflict.
Yes. Ooh. Yeah. There are echoes of sort of Farage in this, aren't there? He sort of wants to, stirring the pot, and that's all very interesting. Meanwhile, they reach a unanimous decision that Jo's been doing some good sort of brinkmanship work, and she's sort of managed to get them all to reach a decision. And then there's discussion about marriage to King Peladon, which she's not too happy about. Or she is. I don't know.
Marriage.
She likes. It's all a bit dodge, isn't it?
But like, during all this, Hepesh has told, is he called Grun?
Grun,
yeah.
So, for some reason, he's going to go and block the secret passage with one of his kidney stones.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's sent to do that, but he does that, and he does that very well.
He does
well.
That. That's been done.
Yeah.
The communications that they use to get there, because all their ships are in orbit, and yes. I think the Ice Warrior discovers that the communicator has been smashed to bits.
Yes, it's been destroyed.
Being destroyed by Colin Baker in Terror of the Verboids. As if it's just him holding an axe.
good.
Yeah.
With one of Alpha Centauri's arms in a bat.
Yeah.
Not yet, Colin, not yet.
Yes, yeah. You'll have your time.
You'll have your time.
So then there's an insurrection happening where that, you know, Hepesh is getting all of these sort of badger men to storm the throne room.
They do look like badger men, yeah.
They do. Even more so in Monster of Peladon, where obviously they're all miners, and so that sort of subtext is played out even more clearly. Mm. It's all kicking off, and there's a big fight in the throne room, which again doesn't look too bad, actually.
Oh, that's all right. Not bad there.
Yeah. Which is interrupted when the doctor says, "Stop everyone, because Agador's here," and he's got Agador, and he's holding him by his horn, and he's leading him around by his horn, and he says,
very John Pertwee-ish, he's saying, "Come on, Agador, old chap."
Yeah.
Walkies.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
Agador, as per, kills Hepesh, as you'd expect. Mm. Sort of from then on, what you get in this, which I think is quite nice, is sort of, you get quite a prolonged period of sort of a coda of this. Like, usually a lot of Doctor Who stories end far too quickly. Think about like Warriors of the Deep, where everyone just dies and then the Doctor says, "Oh shit," and then it ends quickly. Whereas this, there's quite a lot of kind of, there's a few scenes. So first of all, you get the Doctor and Agador, which is so nice. It's like a lovely scene where the sort of now tame Agador and the Doctor are sort of having a nice little thing, and they see the TARDIS again. That's nice. And then you have a really nice scene with Joe and King Peladon.
Joe and the King, yeah, it's really nice. That it's quite touchy. She gives him a little kiss, like to say, like, I was almost tempted at one point to stay.
It's a bit Time Bandits.
Yes, I suppose it is.
Kevin wants to stay with Agamemnon, whatever he's called.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. And then the Doctor touches a microwave and explodes.
Yeah.
And ruins my childhood. So that is the...
But this is the touching moment, because she has that temptation to stay.
Mm.
And then Peladon's like, anyway, I've got to go. It's the coronation. And then the Doctor says, "Do you want to watch the coronation? I've only ever seen one, which was Queen Elizabeth I's. Oh, no, I missed hers, but I saw Victoria's. I can't remember which
Victoria.
One it is.
Yes.
And then what's lovely,
nice.
Right at the end, the real Earth delegates turn up. Like, well, here we are for the talk. And then Joe and Doctor like, "We got a scarper."
They've chosen that, like, the woman who's doing it is quite Thatchery, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's got like she's got the sort of hawkish Thatcherish look, which is, I think, is very nice.
Yeah.
And we get the Doctor, what Doctor, Doctor Who.
Yes,
which is fun. Like, you'd get that joke, I think, once a season in Classic Who, wouldn't you?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Which made it satisfying, whereas there was a point when...
In the modern one, more where recently, it's every episode, isn't it? Every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But there's also that touching moment where he says to Joe, you know, were you tempted to stay? And she says, you know, I was happy. And then he says, well, I'd be quite sad if you did.
Yes.
And then he spits in her face.
Yeah. It's a forward echo, isn't it? Because obviously she will eventually... she will eventually go off with, someone who she meets on an adventure. But so you sort of get the feeling that she's sort of being a bit tempted. Mm. Oh, maybe I could have a life outside the TARDIS.
I was going to say, because this is kind of... Is it the Green Death where she leaves?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, he drops her off at that party and it's quite an emotional little moment, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is the same. And like, because they've been friends this episode, this doesn't feel false. It doesn't ring false. It's really nice. And so, yeah, they escape and the Earth Delegate looks shocked. End of episode.
Mm. Oh, they depart, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's wonderful.
I watched this one twice in sort of quite quick succession, and I think it's just there's so much to like about it.
Yeah.
It's really engaging, and, you know, the plot cracks along. It's four episodes, but they really move at a pace.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that there's weird and crazy monsters. It's a bit like the Star Wars cantina in that sense.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Imaginative.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of the Curse of Peleton, and you can see why they wanted to bring it back for a sequel.
Yeah, yeah, you can. It's an interesting world, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we need to score this baby out of 100 something.
What's it going to be?
Well, Tumble Dryers, I suppose.
Yeah. Arcturus Tumble Dryers.
Yeah, Arcturus Tumble Dryers.
Yeah. Nice.
Right, so, Tom, you go first.
I shall go first. Okay, so, like I say, I really like this one. I think it's very imaginative. I do like Alpha Centauri as well. I know it's very divisive. It's a curate's egg and looks a bit like a curate's egg. So I'm going to score this one high. I'm going to score it 86.
I'll go next. I don't mind. I'm completely in agreement. It's beautiful, beautiful Pertwee Who. It looks sumptuous. It's so much fun. In the first 5 minutes, you've got the TARDIS tumbling away to be destroyed. That, to me, is enough to make me cry forever. Oh, my God, the TARDIS is gone. And then it's got action. It's got fighting. It's got delegates. It's got treachery. It's like a murder mystery whodunit. It's endless aliens, endless debating, a big wet egg for a king. It's got a big monster. It's just got everything that I need in Doctor Who. Joe is absolutely brilliant in it and really holds her own. In fact, it's more her story than it is Pertwee's, weirdly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's so nice for a companion to take the centre stage for some parts of the episode. It's tied up really lovely. I like the fact that they're going to stay and hang around and almost celebrate their success. And then when the real Earth delegates turn up, they're like, shit, we got to get out of here. You can imagine they go, hang on, so you were imposters. So this is all your fault. Oh my God, kill them. So they have disappeared. So I love it so. I just wish they weren't all green, but who cares?
Yeah.
It's fine. And I'm right up with you. I'm going to give it 80 Arcturus tumble dryer washing machine combos out of 100.
Lovely.
It's so much fun.
Well, I will, because we are something of an echo chamber sometimes.
Yes.
I will echo both of what you said from both of you. I think it was brilliant, and I couldn't take my eyes off it, and I loved every second of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go quite high. I'm going to give it 90.
Ooh. Yay!
I would give it more. Mm-hmm. But for some confusing moments of direction, like you say, with the cliffhanger in episode 3, I think it was. Mm. But I love Pertwee so much, and I love him and Joe together.
Yeah.
And everything about this story was fun. So I'm going to give it 90 Arcturus tumble dryers out of 100.
So that is 256 Arcturus tumble dryers out of 300.
Healthy score, that is.
It really is. And like... I think this might not be one that I'd show someone to convince them to watch Doctor Who. It's maybe it's a bit in, but like I think if you're trying to distill sort of a very Doctor Who-y story that's just very well done, very well executed, and really fun, then I think this is one of them. Oh, yeah. No, I just, it was really fun. And it's really, I think it's sort of a triumph in that sense.
The story has a genuine through line, and that's sometimes rare in some of the Doctor Who's. It's all a bit, and then that happened, and then it's the end now, bye. Whereas this actually has a lovely through line to it all. And, to have a murder mystery on an alien planet all thrown into one, it's just really lovely classic Who, isn't it? It's brilliant fun.
You know, where there's lots of red herrings everywhere. And,
green herrings, yeah.
Green herrings.
Which was, of course, the Doctor Zeus version of this story. Yeah.
Not that you can bloody read Dr. Zeus anymore. No. Thanks, cancel culture.
Yeah, thanks, left-wing woke agents.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got someone else on the phone to talk about Dr. Zeus. Okay, mate, what have you got to say about Dr. Zeus?
All right, so they're banned it, aren't they? They're banned it.
Oh, why do you think that, mate?
Well, because I read it or something.
Oh, you read it, did you? Okay. Well, I've got some interesting information for you here, which I'm just going to put you on mute.
I don't think cats should wear hats because it means that they're male.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting.
So you prefer a cat and a bonnet? Okay.
Correspondence.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Okay, we've got correspondence. First one from friend of the show, Tom Burgess. He says, and I quote, I can still see it now in my mind's eye. This huge throbbing green phallus with six snapping claws and a snazzy yellow cape and this inhuman squeaky voice. Then Ernest zipped up his trousers and we watched Doctor Who.
Lovely stuff.
Ben Thomas says, Curse of Peladon. Director Lenny Mayne was horrified when he saw the Alpha Centauri costume due to its phallic appearance. The costume designer fitted Centauri with a yellow cloak to mask its shape, moving Mayne to comment, Great, now it looks like a prick in a cape.
That was the nickname for John Pertwee for ages, wasn't it?
Exactly. Greg Newport says, A head in a jar, a phallic, multi-limbed, one-eyed goy-burl? some whispering green-clawed lizards from Mars with a giant weird unicorn-nosed bear thing thrown in for good measure, watched over by Trout and Spawn sat on a throne.
I mean, that is... I don't know if that person likes it or not, but that is accurate of what it is.
Someone else has got a picture of John Pertwee with the... I've forgotten its name. Agador.
Right.
And it just says, You had better sing that fucking song.
Well, we did it. We got some maroon.
And David K. Barnes says, and this is linked to what we said, I want a harmonised rendition of the Venusian lullaby from all of you, a chart topper in the making.
Oh, well, I mean, we've not just given you that, we've given you how we'd expand it into a full disco.
The very first MTV video we gave you.
Yeah.
The Crinoid podcast says, Curse of Belladon, in which the tradition of the Sea Devils and... Oh, sorry, in the tradition of the Sea Devils and Ice Warriors... where aliens end up calling themselves names that humans have coined for them. Mm. It's a shame the other delegates didn't call themselves Massive Green Cock and Bogey in a Fish Tank. Bogey in a fish tank, oh no, it's serious. And that's it for Curse of Peladon.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, thanks, guys. This is, we've been away for a while, and this was a really nice way of returning to, it's silly, and it knows it's silly. It knows that there's silly elements, but it's Doctor Who, and so you absolutely go along with it. That was absolutely tremendous. Probably not enough mentions of Alpha Centauri looking like a massive cock for our listeners to be truly happy.
I think they were expecting a lot more.
Yeah.
Alpha Centauri looks like a cock, everyone.
I don't know if you've noticed, but very
okay,
much
why
so.
Do you think that, mate? Okay.
There's been a lot more roasting of James O'Brien than we expected.
I would not have expected that when we started.
Yes.
Well, there you go. Okay, so
he should have been on this delegate. He should have been the Earth delegate.
Yeah.
Okay, Doctor Who. Why do you think that, mate? He says plaintively, playing with his beard.
Yeah.
Pertwee would just lamp him.
Yeah. Ow. Okay. Mm.
Oh. Okay. Well, there we go.
There we go. The Curse of Peladon.
Mm. Yay!
Follow us at Wheezing Pod.
At Wheezing Pod, yeah.
At Wheezing Pod.
And we'll be back next week with another tale of Who.
Looking forward to it. See you then, guys.
Bye. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Narun, 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 Narun. Narun, 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 Narun. Narun, Loklida Shina Tierena Charun, Narun, Narun, Arun, Narun, Narun, Arun, Narun, Narun, Arun, 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 Narun.
I'm Keza McDonald.
And I'm Ellie Gibson.
And this is our new show, Extra Life.
It's basically us talking to funny people about video games.
When I was a kid, it was Grand Theft Auto.
The Sinclair ZX Spectrum.
We talk about the games people remember from when they were kids and what they're playing now.
Guitar Hero.
The Last of Us 2.
Combat on the Atari 2600.
No, I love Pokemon.
Anyway, find us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Extra Life.
GreatBigOwl.com.